Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 2, the topic at hand. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the man with a master plan, the man who provides winners like they're going out of style, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
How's the hernia?
You know what? When you get to be my age, every morning you wake up and you have a clean stream. I mean, it's a good day.
We really got to work on this welcome thing. We might be detracting like thousands of listeners after that intro.
I mean, we got to try. We'll tinker a little bit. I mean, today, Payne, for the first time maybe in Bet the Board podcast history, given the Thursday schedule, I actually had to wake up early, shower, clean myself up. So while you sit there and you record in your Florida State boxer shorts every Wednesday and Thursday morning, you know, I had to try and make myself look presentable, because that's always important when people listen to our voices.
That's true. Plus, you're on to some big things.
Yeah, we'll keep...
You got some stuff going on. It's a busy week for you. Busy day now that you're Mr. Media Man.
Yeah, keep ourselves busy. Try and stay out of trouble. I mean, we debated if the media push is better than digging ditches, but that's a different discussion for a different day. As some of our loyal listeners, we're not sure what kind of manual labor they toil in, and appreciate their listenership regardless of how they put food on the table. Payne, before we get into all the overreactions and everything we've seen in the market, I kind of wanted to get your quick take on the tandem of Monday night games we saw, whether it was the Rams opening a can on the Raiders in the second half or the Lions looking like an absolute train wreck against rookie Sam Darnold.
I thought both games went according to plan, honestly. I'm still kicking myself for not getting on the Jets, a team that I believe is better than people think. And I said that in the preseason. I said it again last week. But that means nothing because I didn't bet it. So not going to cry over spilt milk there. The Lions defense is a dumpster fire. I think we discussed that ad nauseum on the Monday night preview. They're learning a new system. They looked slow to react all preseason. We mentioned putting on that all 22, and they just were slow to the ball, weren't quite sure where to go. I did like what the Jets did with Sam Darnold. Now, the first throw was an absolute abortion, and you can blame the offensive coordinator for attempting to take a shot on the first play. But, you know, throwing late and across your body, across the field, you learn that thing in high school. But other than that, I thought Jeremy Bates did pretty well. I was looking at some of those numbers. 47% of Darnold's throws had a play fake element to them. So it was all about keeping the defense on their toes. That was the highest rate of week one. So I did like what Bates did with Darnold. The late game, the listeners got there with the movie and popcorn bet on the first half under 24. So that was nice. We're not always going to have a best bet, obviously. But if you can make a few bucks while watching the game, that's always a positive. We assumed, both of us, once the Raiders' adrenaline wore off, they'd crash back down to life, and that's exactly what happened. I mentioned if you were going to play the Raiders, the only way to do it was in the first half. We saw McVay apply pressure late in that game. He noticed the Raiders were just absolutely gassed, and in the fourth quarter, even though they ran the ball, they were going tempo, they were going no huddle, and that Oakland defense just collapsed.
Yeah, you were spot on with that assessment, and it was almost as though McVay wanted the Raiders to empty both barrels and chambers. They withstood their best shot. I mean, the Rams were dominated in the first half. I think the yardage was pretty close to about 250 to 100. If it wasn't for some big pass interference calls, it could have been worse. But it was almost like you go into the half down a field goal. All right, we worked off the rust. We played two quarters, which is essentially our preseason, and now we'll be running downhill. So that Rams team is going to be very, very tough to handle for a lot of teams in the NFC. A massive favorite this week against Arizona. Not a game, spoiler alert, that we're going to cover in great detail on the podcast. Before we officially put a bow on week one, though, Payne, we did have our first contest winner. Do you have that name handy for a young gentleman that went 5-0?
Ziggy Jams with a Z, so congrats to him. Week one's always tough. It'll come down to the last tiebreaker simply because the points that we require as the tiebreaker. A lot of guys are going to have those in week one. Moving forward, though, it becomes about the skill set, because one of our tiebreakers is the overall season record. So week one's always tough. It was about a 10-way battle. And I will say this, I know a lot of people, you know, told their friends about this contest, but you do have to follow some of the rules. So some of those guys were out of the runnings that did pretty well this week, simply because they didn't use a Twitter handle as their username. So a couple guys were tough to find, couldn't find them. They didn't have a Twitter account. So you got to follow the rules if you want to be eligible for the prizes. But Ziggy Jams took home the week one contest.
So congrats to Ziggy Jams. You will have your Bet the Board swag pack arriving to you in the not so distant future. I appreciate all those folks that signed up. Record numbers in year two of the contest, and looking forward to sharing some of the highlights from that over the next 16 weeks of the regular season. Since it is Thursday, we have an interview with Dave Mason. That'll come later in the show. But Payne, let's get right into the topic at hand, and we may as well start with the Atlanta Falcons taking on the Carolina Panthers. And this number at betonline.ag, you're looking at Atlanta, a 6-point favorite. Total in this game sits at 44.5. Atlanta, of course, a few extra days to prepare off that anemic red zone effort against Philadelphia. Carolina, well, the injuries continue to mount up, could be down as many as 3 key contributors on that offensive line. Is this the kind of scenario you look for with an opportunity to buy low on the Falcons?
Certainly a nice situation developing, I would say, with the extra time, obviously. You have Carolina dealing with the hurricane situation. I was reading into that a little bit and was poking around, asking some questions about it. Supposedly, their plans are laid out at this point. They might leave Carolina early because their practice facility does not have a roof. So they're talking about heading to Georgia early to find a practice facility over there with a roof. So I think all of that plays a factor. And it's just the human element, right? All these guys, they have family, they have friends, they're preparing their homes, they're preparing situations for their family to figure out in advance, are you going to be on the move? Are you going to stay there and hold it out? Like, any minute that your focus isn't on football against a team that's having extra time to prepare is a huge deterrent. And that's why we've seen this line move from as low as 4.5 out to a secondary key number in 6.
Well, I mentioned the injuries for Carolina. I know we'll get to those, but I left out a couple key absences for Atlanta, especially on the defensive side. They lose safety Keanu Neal for the season. Deion Jones also works his way onto IR. How do you quantify some of these cluster injuries, whether it's Atlanta defensively or Carolina offensively, once you factor in that very real human element that poses a potentially big distraction for the Panthers?
Absolutely, and I think that'll be the interesting part of this game, watching Carolina's offense operate against the Falcons' defense. When I look at this, that Deion Jones injury is massive. I think that there could be trouble with that regard when you look at McCaffrey and how he was implemented in the first week. I think there was discussions or some hesitancy about how much he would be implemented, and he took a full workload in week one, 85% of the running back snaps. It's been a short sample. He's done some nice things against Atlanta, though, catching the ball. And without Deion Jones, who's one of the very elite coverage linebackers, things could be tough. Keanu Neal is also out, but we knew about that one, certainly. Dan Quinn's system in general, though, it allows running back passes. He is routinely one of the worst defenses with running back receptions. And Deion Jones kind of masked that. That's why that defense is bad, because it's just Deion Jones basically in coverage. So that is concerning for sure. For Carolina's offense, Greg Olsen being out hurts. A lot of guys, as you mentioned, on the offensive line are out. They dealt with some of those prior to this game, certainly, but a couple of those guys got re-injured with Williams there and Turner. Khalil, they've been without for a while now. Offensively with Olsen out, I don't know if it'll be as bad as a situation as last year, because they're already used to dealing with life without Olsen. We saw Funches. He certainly, his snap count surges when Olsen's out. So that's something to factor in. He's been the beneficiary with Olsen out. His usage rate just skyrockets. I don't know what we're going to see. Yeah, go ahead.
I know. I was going to ask. I mean, we obviously have folks that are big-time fantasy players that listen to the podcast as well. I mean, suffice to say, I don't think I'm going out on a limb that Devin Funchess has now established himself as the number one option for Cam Newton in the passing game.
I would think so, probably as the more consistent target for sure. I mean, his usage rates go through the roof when Olsen was out last year. So, you know, if you're in the PPR, I think, you know, at this point, Funchess is probably a guy that's in your lineup. I think when I look at this for Carolina, the question becomes, are they going to be able to run the ball between the tackles? If they can't, you know, the offense is pretty limited at that point. Now, again, they've dealt without Olsen, but I think this could be tough sledding this week with extra prep for Atlanta. And when you throw in extra prep, it's a unit that they're already familiar with, right? They face them two times a year, so I think that plays even a larger role. It's the situation that's really bad here. On the other side of the ball for Atlanta, that's what's going to be interesting as well. I texted you as we were watching that game, and I believe it was two throws in against Philly, and I said, Jesus, looks like Matt Ryan's going with his changeup tonight. And that scared me. There's a lack of velocity on his ball. Maybe we'll see a difference with him playing at home indoors. It's not as humid, but we're going to be able to know right away if we're downgrading Matt Ryan this season, if age finally caught up to him, if Father Time caught up to him. But the release looked a little slow, and there wasn't much zip on that ball. Just 32% of his passes graded successful. I don't know what we're going to get here. There's just no excuses at this point. Devontae Foreman is a real question mark here. He claims he's going to be playing. He had a knee issue last year, if you remember, to end the season. All indications point to him wanting to play, but they did call up another back from their practice squad, so that's a pretty good tell here that he might not be 100%. There is some questions, again, with the red zone offense. If you couldn't fix it in the entire offseason, even with the extended week, what do we see here? I don't believe that team got the intel they needed moving forward, although it shouldn't be very difficult to know that you probably should spread it open a little bit and not use as many bulk packages down around the goal line. We'll see if that adjusts a little bit. The play formations have been very bad for Atlanta in the red zone, and they have the weapons. They have the system in place to be effective down there. Sark might just not know at this point what he's doing wrong.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see. Obviously, you hate to say must win early in the season, but within the division, the Falcons, extra time to prepare, and all the things they have working in their favor, I have to imagine you're going to get their best effort. It's just a question of what that particular best effort will be with an afternoon kickoff Sunday in Atlanta. A game, unfortunately, Payne, that had a lot of intrigue and still does, but for some of the wrong reasons. There's no line available at this point at betonline.ag. The Vikings on the road for an NFC North showdown against the Green Bay Packers. We may as well start with the main storyline here. Will he or won't he be out there? That he, of course, being the man wearing number 12 in Green Bay Packer green and gold.
Yeah, I don't really want to, you know, speculate on whether Rodgers is going to play or not. And I think with the game off the board, there's really no reason to. Like, there isn't a market opportunity at this point to get out ahead with information. There is one spot I checked this morning that does have it up. I mean, I think you're probably in a plus EV situation if you do have a line available to you that's near a pick to get out ahead of Minnesota and probably figure out the rest later. I think we know what the injury is at this point, right? It's not a big secret. It's a sprained MCL, which is a tear. It's just like a different grade of tear. And in this injury usually takes 2 to 4 weeks to get back to 100%. I saw an interview last night. Rodgers came out around like 7 p.m. He said there's still soreness there. Each day he's getting better. He obviously wants to play. He knows he's not going to be 100%. The mobility is certainly going to be limited. He'll be a pocket passer for the most part, I would think. He refuses to get shot up. So I think when this eventually opens everywhere, we're going to see this tweener line. And I think the folks with the best information will probably determine where this line goes once the tweener line opens. It's a division game, so you don't just want to give it away. I know they won week one, but I'm sure Rodgers has been chomping at the bit, especially seeing the Vikings on the schedule early in the season.
Yeah, for chance to get some of the bad taste out of his mouth for the hit last year that sidelined him for a good chunk of the season with the broken collarbone. I guess, Payne, instead of spending too much time on this game, since it's more speculative than anything else, and we have a deep dive coming on a number of other marquee matchups, if Aaron Rodgers was ruled out, what kind of adjustment do you make at the quarterback position, the drop-off from him to DeShone Kizer? Because by all accounts, with a healthy Rodgers, you figure the Packers would have been about a 1.5 to 2-point home favorite here.
it's really a fun process to see when this happens, and you hate to see anyone injured, especially a player like Aaron Rodgers. But every year, the old school bookmaker usually starts it at about 7 points, and then they realize it's just not enough. And it's happened a couple times throughout the course of his career. And finally, we figure out he's worth about 10 points, especially with the other backups on the roster. Now, this year, and I'm not a Kaiser guy, but he's certainly better than Hundley. If I'm a bookmaker, I'm probably starting off at about 8, 8.5 points and then figuring it out from there if he's out, you know, multiple weeks. I can't see that being the situation, but I think this week you're looking at something in the range of about an 8.5 point adjustment, but I don't think we will see that initially. Maybe that's where it closes, but I just, again, I think books are going to put out a tweener line here. And the one thing you look at, when you have a backup quarterback going against a Minnesota defense with Zimmer, his system is just so next level. It's really going to cause some confusion there. They have an ability to get after the quarterback. That's one thing we saw last week. Jimmy G was running for his life. I'm sure he at some point he was praying he was still Tom Brady's backup because he was pressured by the Minnesota defense on 50% of his dropbacks. That will probably be a likely scenario here again when you're looking at a Green Bay offensive line that's still working its way back. A lot of guys are injured. They're working their way back from injury. They're not 100%. And that was part of the problem we saw on Sunday Night Football against the Bears defense.
Well, if the Vikings like to bring pressure on opposing quarterbacks, this next team, from what I saw last weekend, really doesn't have that same luxury. They, of course, would be the Kansas City Chiefs, who find themselves on the road at Heinz Field. 4-point underdogs at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 52.5. Payne, the total and side have both been on the move. We've seen Pittsburgh as high as a 5.5-point favorite before there was some major resistance, and the total, open 50.5, has climbed out, got to 53, saw a little buyback there. I mean, I know that you are on the Patrick Mahomes bandwagon. You talked about him being the face of the franchise last year before he ever took a rep at the NFL level. This will be the 15th meeting between these two proud franchises over the last 21 years, which is a little bit odd when you consider that they're not in the same division. Fair or foul, all the love that we're seeing heaped on Mahomes since he has officially become the belle of the ball after that week one performance?
He is the talk of the town, that's for sure. And the Chiefs offense is nice. Patty Mahomes, Tariq Hill, unstoppable, baby. And listen, like, trust me when I say this, for greedy financial reasons, I hope and pray Patty Mahomes is Aaron Rodgers 2.0.
Do you want to disclose any of that? Why? Or do we want to keep that a mystery?
No. Yeah, I keep that in mind.
Okay, that's good. We'll let people speculate out there.
And, you know, the KC offense was electric last week. Averaged 8.5 yards per play. That was number one in the NFL. The success metrics were nice as well. But this is a tough spot here, right? It's back-to-back road games to start the season. And maybe it doesn't happen this week. Maybe it takes 6 or 7 weeks. But at some point, more is going to be asked of Patty Mahomes. He ran a full-blown gimmick college offense last week against the Chargers, and certainly he made wow throws. The arm talent is never going to be questioned, and that's why he's the starting quarterback, and Alex Smith is out of town right now. But as that tape continues to grow, NFL defenses are going to adjust to this kind of offense, and just like they did the last handful of seasons. Andy Reid at some point is probably going to have to turn over play calling duties. But the only problem is this year he doesn't have Doug Peterson or Matt Nagy to take those by the reins and help this offense improve. So Andy Reid is going to have one of his very best seasons ever with creating new play designs, keeping things fresh. His play calling ability in game is going to have to be better than it's ever been because the offensive coordinator this year, I don't know if he's capable of calling plays and being as successful as Doug Peterson or Matt Nagy.
And I think Kansas City obviously going to have a lot of pressure on them offensively. When you look at a defense that last week gave up 7 yards per attempt in their win against the Los Angeles Chargers. I look at Pittsburgh, Payne, on the flip side. They come into this game fresh off of that ugly tie against Cleveland, but lost in the box score for some folks who don't do that digging is the fact the Steelers held the Browns under 4 yards per play, were nearly 2 yards better in that category. Finished the game -5 in turnovers. You finish games -5 in turnovers in the NFL, you should be losing by 20 or 30 points, not having a commanding 21-7 lead late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you don't have to convince me. I hear what you're saying here. As we know, the total is real. It's really real. Over 50, over 50.5, extremely real position from professional bettors. When it comes to the side, certainly there is all the tickets, all the public are on the Patty Mahomes train here. It's pretty glaring. And there isn't an ability to kind of get that ball rolling early in the week, if you kind of get where I'm going with this. There is some speculation about Big Ben's elbow. He calls it bruised. The MRI came back fine. I can't see him sitting out for this one. So, you know, there is question marks there with the elbow. Maybe that is the reason this came down a little bit. I don't see that being the reason. And when you look at this matchup of Pittsburgh's offense and Kansas City's defense, I think I've been banging this story, like the drum all offseason and in our preview podcast, and I think we'll continue to do it throughout the course of the season. This Kansas City defense is one of the worst units in the NFL, and I don't think it's close. And I know they won last week, so fans don't care what actually happens on the field. But in reality, this Chiefs defense gave up 7.3 yards per play. The Chargers outgained KC by 0.7 yards per play. You look at some of these success metrics. The Chargers were successful on 59% of their runs, 56% of their passes. This Chiefs defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. They were very lucky last week as well. These numbers could have been dramatically better. And that's scary to think about, because you had Tyrell Williams drop a pass. You had Travis Benjamin drop a pass. You had Rivers have a complete brain fart where he throws an interception in plus territory. There was zero pressure on him. He was just kind of forcing a ball into space. Receivers ended up getting clumped running virtually the same route, and it, you know, attracted defenders to the same area. But this defense was horrible, and it could have been significantly worse.
Oh, by the way, in case you were wondering, as we sit here recording this podcast, it comes across our injury alert on our Donbass sports screen. Le'Veon Bell officially downgraded to doubtful for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't think anybody out there thought he was going to be able to contribute this week anyways.
Is that? That's news. And please tell me this sends Pittsburgh lower.
I'm watching the numbers right now. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. We have seen a couple of reputable offshores take the number off the board. I'm not sure if this time of day you have your B team in there to try and move numbers when limits open, but let's keep tabs on this because we may be able to change our...
James Conner was awesome last week, by the way.
Well, I'm sorry?
James Conner was awesome last week, by the way, and I don't want to keep hammering this, but like the success rate metrics for James Conner's last week was fantastic. Le'Veon Bell is going to have zero impact this early in the season. We saw it last year. We already have examples of this. 3.1 yards per touch the first 2 weeks. He's not going to be in game shape. They're implementing a new system, which he hasn't learned yet. Like, he isn't going to be a force early on, even when he does come back. So him having any impact on this line is banana land.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be fascinating to try and see ultimately where this number settles. The Steelers have won and covered 4 out of the last 5 meetings. Antonio Brown went absolutely bonkers, 155 yards and a touchdown the last time these two teams did battle. We head from Heinz Field down south to Tampa, where the Buccaneers find themselves 3 minus a quarter is what you have to lay at betonline.ag on the Eagles right now. Total in this game, 44. Payne, I mean, are you shocked at all by how short this number is, or do you think it's a current reflection of what we saw Thursday night from Philadelphia, who struggled mightily offensively, and Tampa on the heels of that 48-point outburst at the Saints?
I don't know what the hell to make of this line. It didn't move any from the look-ahead line, and it's really throwing me for a loop here, and I'm a little bit stunned with how well Tampa performed, that more public action isn't backing Tampa at home as a dog. So the bet splits are throwing me off. The line's throwing me off a little bit here. Certainly, you know, there's some question marks for that Philadelphia offense. Somehow, I'm going to keep bringing this up for whatever reason, they won and covered on Thursday Night Football. They averaged 3.6 yards per play on offense. The database that we have went back from the merger. Any team that was laying points, and that's what we got. We, you know, we took 4, 4.5, so that's what we plugged in the database. No one had ever covered 4.5 points, gaining 3.6 yards per play on offense. But, you know, and Nick Foles looked exactly like who we thought he would be. Maybe you see this Buccaneers defense and you have extra time to prep. It could be a blessing, and I know it was a huge win for the Bucs last week, no doubt. But it wasn't because of the defense. I can tell you that. They gave up 8.1 yards per play to the Saints. Their issues in the secondary got worse. Hargraves appeared to have torn his labrum, so he's on the IR. Brent Grimes, who missed week one, still hasn't practiced yet this week. So two starting corners being out is absolutely trouble. Nobody seems to know when Vita Vey, the first-round pick, is going to finally make his debut either. And despite the issues offensively for Philly, they can still lean on that elite offensive line and run the ball. They did that pretty efficiently against Atlanta a week ago, and we saw the Bucs defense. 69% of runs graded successful. The Saints were number one in rushing success rate last week. You also have to monitor the JPP situation. He hasn't practiced yet this week with a knee injury. So that Tampa D could be looking a little ugly this week.
And then on the other side, Tampa, of course, dealing with an injury to one of their key contributors in the passing game, DeSean Jackson, yeah. Concussion and shoulder. What do you expect his potential availability to look like?
I don't think it's looking good, but I love Chris Godwin. so I don't know how much of a downgrade it is. Listen, I talk about this all the time. If you've heard me for the last 3 or 4 years, there's only so many DeSean Jacksons, and that's why he remains in this league. Like Ted Ginn, as long as he can run like a 4.3, he's going to be in this league just because he makes space for everybody else. So that could be a big loss. And, you know, just in general, Tampa offensively, like I don't want to downplay what Ryan Fitzpatrick did last week. You can't take anything away from him with that performance, but I think you're also completely fooling yourself if you think there's going to be a repeatable performance this week that's anything close to what he did last week. Certainly he has been known for up and down performances. There's a reason, the guy turns 36 in November. Like the light bulb just didn't come on for him, right? He had months to prep for that in a team that he's seen before. I just think this is going to be a different beast here against Philadelphia's defense. That is the best defensive line in football. They got after Matt Ryan last week, pressured him on 39% of his dropbacks. They limited the Atlanta ground game. I think the extra rest, the extra time to prepare is helpful. Brandon Graham, he's going to be healthier. He said he was only about 80% last week, took limited snaps. Nigel Bradham is set to return, so that's a big key cog for that Philadelphia defense back in the middle of the field. There's also some question marks to left tackle, Donovan Smith. Will he play in this game? So you don't have your left tackle potentially against this defensive line. I don't love that situation. Now, I initially set myself up, and I think both of us did, Todd, here, so you can interject, that we were looking at Tampa Bay in this spot.
Yep.
Some of these injuries certainly scare us off a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make a case for the dog like I would before. I was actually bullish on the under. I know we had talked about that as well. Obviously, some of that enthusiasm gets tempered with those injuries in the secondary, but it begs the question, even with those injuries, does Nick Foles have enough of a vertical passing threat to try and put pressure there? So, very curious to see how this game ultimately settles, and if books decide to dangle a 3.5 out there, how quickly that could potentially get gobbled up. One last part on this game, Payne, we look on the sidelines. How big a mismatch is it at head coach Doug Peterson against Dirk Cutter?
A comparison our listeners might not know. Which do you prefer, Popeyes or KFC?
I'm a Popeyes guy through and through. KFC's not even in the same stratosphere.
I totally agree. And Popeyes in this situation is Doug Peterson. So I'm not a huge Dirk Cutter guy. Certainly the game plan that he implemented last week was off the charts good. I'm interested to see, though, and you mentioned, and I mentioned it and you followed up about that secondary. I want to see how Tampa's defense plays. Like, are they going to, with two DBs out, two corners out, and it's already a bad unit to begin with, are they going to play off? Right? Because that's the battle. You don't trust Nick Foles' arm. You don't think he's got an arm. So you'd like to play press. But with backup corners, are you going to come into that game and say, hey, we're going to play off? Well, that plays right into Philly's offense, right? They like that quick, short passing game. And it seems like Foles can gain confidence. He's a confidence guy. You can tell. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. If he gets firing early with some quick passes, he looks a little bit better. So that's the one thing I'm going to be intrigued to see. And maybe I live bet this game. If Tampa decides to come out and play off because they want to prevent the deep play because they don't trust all their backup cornerbacks, I think that opens things up for the Philadelphia offense.
Should be an interesting game knowing how both teams performed in week one. Obviously, very different expectations for the defending Super Bowl champs and a team that a lot of us thought would struggle to try and even get to 6 wins. So we shall see how this shakes out. And to maybe the best game of the day, in my opinion, Payne, it's a rematch of the AFC Championship. We're looking at New England, a 1.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 45. They take on the Jags, and we've seen this number kind of ping pong all over the place. Open pick 'em, -1, got up as high as 2.5. There was some major resistance there. When you look at this contest, obviously Jacksonville has probably had it circled as soon as the schedule came out, knowing that they were a 3rd-and-18 conversion and a 10-point lead away from playing for their first Super Bowl in franchise history.
Blew that game. Without question, When I look at this game, it's intriguing for sure. I think, you know, depending on where you like to start, we can start with the Patriots offense and the Jags defense, because I think there's some matchup things there that become a little bit interesting, especially when you do your reading. And so just looking at what I saw last week from the Patriots offense, their line was better than I thought it would be. Skarnecki is a fantastic offensive line coach. He's always going to get the most out of his players. Last week, they just basically brought in Trent Brown. He did more than hold his own at left tackle. That was big. Marcus Cannon, we mentioned, potentially could have been out at right tackle. He's dealing with some lingering issues there, but performed, I thought, pretty well at right tackle. But they're going to need another big performance up front from that offensive line, because the Jaguars' defensive front, if you've been reading, they're looking to get after TB this week. And there's talks about changing their defense stylistically and paging Mike Tomlin. If you are listening to this, maybe grab the notebook and a pen.
Hey, you know what, Payne? I'll say one thing. Our listeners are probably disappointed. We didn't take shots at Tomlin last week. So the fact that we're doing it on a week two podcast, we're at least there a lot sooner than I would have anticipated.
Yeah. Grab that pen and pad, Tomlin, as you're listening to this. So the Jaguars are going to go man this week. They realized allowing one of the most efficient short passing attacks in NFL history to just simply find holes in a zone wasn't the ideal approach. They're going to force this mash unit of pass catchers to create separation on their own. And so the Jaguars are talking about man coverage this week. And you start to look at these numbers, and I don't want to overreact because it was just a one game sample. But maybe with these limited weapons at receiver, that's going to be felt, especially here against a superior secondary. And that's the big thing. They didn't face a superior secondary with the Texans in week one. And you look at some of those numbers and you try to anticipate and project. Again, one game sample size, but the Patriots operated at about a 4% decrease in passing success from their two-year average. But when you factor in situation, opponent, it's a bit concerning. Potentially, we're looking at Bill Belichick, and he's as good as they come, obviously. Maybe he doesn't go a lot of receivers in this. Maybe he looks at formations and says, listen, this is going to be a 1-2 receiver set kind of game. We're going to play two tight ends. We're going to play two running backs potentially, because you look at this in the Jaguars defense. They were very efficient last year when you tried to pass the ball, but you told them you were passing. So like three wide receiver sets didn't work very well. But if you ran one and two wide receiver sets, you had about a 16% greater success rate in the pass game. You'd think Bill Belichick has that data available. So we could see more running, more bunch formations with one and two tight ends and one and two running backs. And maybe you limit your issue there in the passing game with not having the available weapons out wide.
When we look on the other side of the ball, of course, the big questions center around the Jaguars' bell cow. Leonard Fournette dealing with a hamstring injury. I think we should expect him to go. It's anybody's guess how effective he'll be. If he can't go, and it's T.J. Yeldon, who averaged 2.6 yards per carry last week, and Blake Bortles was 6 of 16 throwing the football in the second half against that Giants defense, how much does it change the handicap, and what should we expect from the Jaguars as far as offensive capabilities, maybe playing some tempo, looking to air it out, or stay committed to the ground game regardless of who's going to be the man under center behind Blake Bortles?
You know, Leonard claims he's playing. And who knows how effective he'll be with that hamstring. He hasn't practiced yet this week. Seems like there's always a nagging injury with that dude. Like, as big as he is, like, his body frame, he's always getting nicked up. It drives me nuts. He's always got an ankle or a hamstring. It's like of the small injury variety, too, which is always annoying. The other thing you're going to want to monitor here offensively for the Jaguars is Patrick Linder. The Jaguars center has not practiced this week either. If you can't get the ground game going, and Jacksonville's always going to try. Like, that's how they're built right now. That's their MO. When you brought in Coughlin, that's just what they're going to do. So they're going to try it initially, for sure. I have no issues with Bortles passing a little bit more. It just has to be done the right way. It has to be done from run formations. It has to be the one read rollouts. It has to be off play fakes and play action. He's not a guy that you're going to be able to use in 3-4 wide receiver sets and say, hey, go read, go react, and deliver on time consistently, because it's just not going to happen. He's never going to be that. He did grade out well last week. I know he had the poor second half, had a huge run there where they were backed up against the goal line and he ran for about 40 yards, which changed the complexion of that game just a little bit. Graded out the 14th best quarterback. And I think that's good enough, right? When you look at what this Jaguars defense is, if he can just be average and even above average, that's going to be enough here for the Jaguars, I would think. The line tells you everything you need to know. There is professional money on the Jaguars, obviously, at this point. It's down to pick them. The other thing that's intriguing to me is the total, just a little bit here, without those weapons for the Patriots offense, with the Jaguars going to probably something that's a little bit better defensively, playing that man, forcing the Patriots to create separation on their own rather than being completely schemed open or just running out and finding holes in a defense. So I think that plays a big role. There's going to be a little weather here from what it looks like. Now, obviously, Florence isn't going to be hitting the Jacksonville area, but it's massive. Like I was reading that it's like the size of four states of Ohio. So there's going to be some outer skirt stuff, some outer band stuff, and it looks like there's going to be about a 20-mile-per-hour wind there at kickoff for the Jacksonville game. So certainly going to want to monitor that as well.
By the way, Payne, your question was answered. You did have one book go to 3.5 on the Steelers. That number lasted about 7 seconds.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's...
So just keep that in mind. I'll let you poke around as to what book that actually was when we finish recording and doing our due diligence. A couple of things to keep in mind. I know these trends are absolutely meaningless, but they're still fun to talk about, so I'm going to do it anyways.
You do the talking about it, I'll just do the listening then.
That's what I was going to say. I mean,
trends. I'm not a big trend guy.
No, New England, a 60% success rate since Tom Brady took over as a starting quarterback. Absolutely mind-boggling when we talk about books. Trying to force you to pay a premium to back good teams. Over the last 39 games, the Patriots, 29-10 against the spread. Last 16 games away from Gillette Stadium, 13-3. And oh, by the way, 22-7 against the number against AFC opponents. But as we know, professionals...
Situational football.
What'd you say?
Situational football. That's what it comes down to. A lot of these games, like New England was this the highest scoring second quarter team. And you just watch how they operate around the 3-4 minute mark. They just do it better. It's situational football, and that's why they're winning these games. And you saw last week, you get the touchdown right before the half. It's the momentum score, and that's why it's so big. One team goes into halftime dejected, giving up the score. The other team runs in there like they're ready to go through a brick wall. And it's situational football. There's not this overblown load of talent. But those trends do make some sense. It's pretty scary when you think about it that you could just blindly back Tom Brady and Bill Belichick to a 60% win rate. Feels a little bit like Saban in Alabama.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot to be said about trying to quantify stupidity for a lot of teams in the NFL as you build out some of those power numbers, which creates a perfect segue into the Sunday Night Football game, where it's the Dallas Cowboys hosting the New York Football Giants. Dallas, a 3-point favorite at BetOnline.ag, total 42. Payne, we've seen money come in on the underdog. We've seen money come in on the under. The odds of making the postseason after an 0-2 record is a little less than 11%. The Giants were everybody's darling in terms of being a dark horse candidate to not only win the division, but maybe even represent the NFC. Dallas lacked an offensive identity last week, didn't cross midfield until the third quarter in that 16-8 loss against Carolina. The floor is yours for whichever direction or angle you'd like to tackle in a game we've seen on Sunday Night Football seemingly every year since 2012.
I'm going to start it with something that people will think is a wow statement. It's not.
Is it Instagrammable? Because if it's not, then I don't really want to hear it.
And we touched on this in the preseason. We touched on this in the preview pod, and I think we touched on it last week. Travis Frederick isn't just the loss of an elite lineman. He is gone from a run-dependent team that has no other options but to run the football. So this impact is massive. We knew how big it would be. Again, don't want to be the wow guy in this business, but I'm going to go out on a limb, and I believe that Travis Frederick's loss might be worth more than any other player in this league that isn't a quarterback. And I feel pretty confident in saying that. So I don't know what Dallas is going to do because you don't have a head coach that is going to do anything schematically to really give you an advantage. And that's the issue here. Right now, we're looking at a game that's going to have all public money on the Giants early on in the week. professional money on the Giants as well. Let's see if that lasts. Let's see. Maybe that was a potential starter, so to speak. But it's all Giants action. And I would presume Dave and the company there at betonline.ag is going to need Dallas like blood. When I look at this game, you know, Olivier Vernon did return to the practice field just to get some running in. I don't think he's going to play with the high ankle sprain. He's an underdog at this point to play Sunday night. And that's an important guy, I think, that's out of the lineup. So, you know, he's one of the very best edge-setting run defenders in the NFL. I think that's something you're going to need when you do play Dallas. They did a good job last week. This Giants defense, I was pretty proud of them last week. There was energy. There was effort. They stopped the run at a pretty good clip, only a 39% success rate for the Jaguars. If they can match that this week and really prevent the Cowboys from running, they're probably going to win this game. On the offensive side of the ball, I thought Eli played okay. There were two throws that were absolutely horrific, and unfortunately, they cost the Giants the ball game. Two massive throws. He missed Odell Beckham Jr. wide open for a touchdown, and then, you know, like normal, he was afraid to get hit, and so he just threw up a ball that got returned for a pick six. But there was opportunity there for a much better result against the Jaguars. The metrics are never going to look great when you're playing Jacksonville, so they weren't very good. Pat Shurmur's offense, you know, in week one, I think there's going to be an adjustment period here. I don't know where you want to go from here. No, but
well, I was going to further support what you said. I actually spoke to an offensive lineman earlier this week, a former player, and he mentioned the same things you did regarding Travis Frederick. The Dallas just look lost trying to adjust protections and figure out ways to execute their offense against Carolina, and I think that's going to be a recurring theme until they can get him back on the field. I mean, we talk about all the time certain centers are worth more than others, but to hear you kind of quantify that statement saying he may be more valuable than any other player in the game outside of a quarterback should put some of it in perspective. And Apine, I wanted to ask you a little bit about a quote from Landon Collins, and he said, okay, it's totally different offense without Jason Witten. Dez made his own presence known, but without Witten, that was their go-to. Like, now, it's like, who do you go to? He's looking for Zeke more times than he's looking for any receivers down the field. If you're the Giants' defense, how little respect do you have to pay to this no-name receiving core, knowing it's Zeke and a cast of misfits?
So, you know, the receiving core issue, again, you know, it's bad, no doubt. Is it worse than last year? Probably not. The question there, I think, is more the tight end position. And while Witten wasn't very good, you know, between the 20s, he was a situational guy. So on third and short, he's that big body in the middle of the field. He's Dak's security blanket in the red zone specifically is where Witten ate last year. And I think that's where, now, again, they didn't really get down to the red zone. So I'd envisioned it probably would have been a problem down there. But those are the areas where you're going to miss Witten. In those small spaces, is he going to go out and outrun somebody or make these massive plays after the catch? No, it's more about being efficient in his route running, kind of posting up the defender and creating this big, large target for Dak smack in the middle of his face over the middle of the field. And I think that's where he's missed. And listen, this is all about organizational fit. This is all about being precise in the things you do. And I want to point this out. The Dallas Cowboys needed a tight end once Jason Witten retired. And I know he retired at the 11th hour and put them in a bad position. But at this point, when you know you didn't have a tight end on the roster that was going to be a sufficient day one starter, you needed to go get your guy. And what ended up happening? Your guy was Dallas Goedert. The entire freaking world knew it and knew that you needed a tight end. And the Eagles are just a better organization. They picked up a tight end despite having Zach Ertz, and went and got their guy, not only because he's fantastic, but to block you. And this is what good organizations do, not what Jerry Jones does. And I think it's really going to hinder what they do this season. And listen, this isn't news to anybody. We gave out the Dallas under on the preseason podcast. We don't like Dallas this year. And the defense, and it's sad because I think they finally have an improved defense. But this offense is a train wreck right now.
And the Giants, coming into last season, had covered five straight in this series. Four straight games between these two divisional rivals have gone under the total. And again, a useless trend pain because that's what I like to do. Dallas, since 1990...
You're getting used to this TV thing.
No, I mean, I just like to throw out nuggets. I mean, people go away. I mean, you can't really do anything with it, so it's probably a waste of everyone's time, and it's 40 seconds of their lives they're not going to get back. But Dallas, since 1993...
Grab a snack.
What? Excuse me?
grab a snack.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead. Grab your chapstick. Make sure your water bottle's filled.
You know what? I do. I'm going to grab that chapstick right now. The pomegranate here, moisturizing lip balm.
That's what I was going to say. I want to try and buy you time before we wrap this podcast up shortly. Since 1993, Dallas has played 213 football games. Their record against the spread, 107 wins, 106 defeats. So odds makers.
They're an average football team is what you're saying.
Yeah, they're an average football team. And that's pretty much what we see on the field week in, week out.
Ooh, last week was not average. That was ugly.
Well, it was a masterpiece. It was a Picasso. It was a Jackson Pollock. It was whatever your favorite artist is if you were sitting on a first half and full game under ticket.
That's true. I'm still
go ahead. Apply your lip balm. And while you do that, we'll go out and we'll take care of the interview. We got to do a little business. He's the man with the plan. He joins us every single Thursday throughout the course of the NFL season. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, I was all ready. I had myself mentally prepared to laud you guys for what I thought was going to be a banner opening weekend. And then, of course, the nightcap on Monday Night Football happened, and I have to imagine it put a little bit of a damper on what otherwise would have been a very profitable weekend for the house.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. That game kicked us in the drawers a little bit, but actually a lot. But, I mean, it was still a profitable weekend, but it would have been, like you said, a banner weekend if the Raiders showed up in the second half. The house won big on the Bears Sunday night. That was massive. Jets Monday night. Got Monday night started real profitable for us. And the Buccaneers Sunday was huge. Eagles too Thursday night. The public, Ravens, Vikings. But yeah, that Rams game, that was just, holy hell. That was massive. I mean, that was by far the biggest decision of the weekend. And the public won it.
Oh, go ahead, Dave. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut
you. No. And the public won it big. So they finished the weekend with a big one.
Payne, I was almost going to kick Dave off of the show for talking about the Eagles game that I finally buried like a football in the backyard a week ago today.
Sore subject here, Dave. Sore subject, that Falcons game. When we look at week two, you got time to rebound a little bit. What does it look like so far? Any big moves, sharp or otherwise?
Yeah, both sharp. Bengals tonight, plus one, that they're favored by a point now. 49ers, minus five. They're up to 6.5. Jaguars plus two. They're down to 1-point favorite. KC plus 4.5, plus five. They're down to plus four. Bills plus 7.5. They're now plus seven. I find it interesting that the Sharps bet the Browns every week last year, and they never covered. They bet them last week, and they finally covered, and they're not on them yet. So we'll see if they're back on the Browns. Public, tons of lopsided action. Ravens tonight, 74%. Skins, 67%. Chargers is a big one. At the Bills, 89%. Chiefs, 77%. Jets, 69%. Eagles, 84%. Patriots is going to be massive, 87%. And Sunday Night Football, Giants, 74%. So no shortage of sweats this weekend.
Always interesting, Dave, to hear about the general public kind of latching on to an underdog, especially in a marquee game on Sunday night. And I have to think, when you look at the way this season's shaping up, the Browns won't be the biggest headache for you guys every week. It could potentially be the Buffalo Bills and that dumpster fire they have going on in Western New York.
Yeah, I think the 2018 Bills are going to be the 2017 Browns, with people just fading them every week. We'll see if the Sharps bite into them every week like they did this weekend, so we'll see.
And if last weekend was good for the house, I imagine there were some players, hopefully not our listeners, since we got them to the window with the best bet on the Cincinnati Bengals, that may still want to load up at betonline.ag or maybe open an account for the first time, knowing that you guys are first to market with not only college football numbers on Sunday, but oftentimes also the NFL. What kind of promotions are available for those folks?
All right, if you do not have a betonline.ag account, get over there and sign up for one. Takes about 2 minutes. Then use promo code 75BTB on your first ever deposit to get a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Dave, before we let you go, you got any other hot steamy nuggets for us to drop on the listeners?
Hot steamy nuggets. There's always some hot steamy nuggets down here. No, that the live betting we saw in that the Bears Packers game, that was the swings. it went up to the Bears were up to minus 2,000 when Kizer was in. And we took a lot of action there on both sides. Also, a lot of action on minus 1,800, plus 900. Sharps were actually on the Bears at minus 17.5. So get on over to our live betting software. It's the best in the U.S.-facing industry, and bet those games all throughout the game.
Great opportunities available for you at betonline.ag throughout the course of not only football season, but some of the lowest lines in the industry as the NHL starts to crank up as well. Major League Baseball playoffs right around the corner. NBA, it is truly a betting bonanza for sports bettors. Dave, can't thank you enough for your time this Thursday morning. Best of luck this weekend, and we'll catch up next Wednesday. Talk a little bit about college football.
Beautiful. Have a good weekend.
Wow, Payne Mason coming out hot. He echoed your same sentiment, saying that they are definitely going to need the Dallas Cowboys in Sunday Night Football. Was a little bit surprised to hear him say that the Chiefs were sharp, given what we talked about. Maybe a setup. Maybe they have taken a little bit of respected money so far.
Yeah. Again, over very real. Side, a little bit questionable. Certainly the Big Ben situation with the elbow, all signs point to him being a go. Maybe someone has a little better intel on that than I, but, you know, who knows? Could feel like a little setup. I was looking at the screen there while we were on that interview, and not that I wasn't paying attention to what Dave was saying, but I was scrolling the timeline. That didn't last very long when they went to 3.5.
No, I told you seconds, and that wasn't really an exaggeration.
I think there will probably be lots of professionals, if they can buy down to 3 and lay it, that would certainly be a situation that is positive expectation there for sure.
Yeah, and the least surprising part of our talk with Dave, as you alluded to on Monday, professional bettors gravitating towards the Buffalo Bills in a bounce back spot and an overcompensation of the market, a game that I won't even waste our time with, especially the airwaves, to try and get into. But we do have one game left, Payne, and it, of course, is the Thursday night football game between Cincinnati and Baltimore. We have the Bengals, a one-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 45. And again, we talked about it a little bit with Jacksonville against New England. This isn't quite playoff revenge, but this is season-long revenge as Andy Dalton, the rip the hearts out of the Baltimore Ravens with his last-minute heroics to keep the Ravens out of the postseason a season ago and almost costing Coach Harbaugh's job.
You know, I initially liked Cincy in this spot, and that's certainly the, you know, air quotes, professional side here. There's been a little money that way. Listen, you have the obvious revenge angle here for Baltimore. You know, they got booted from the playoffs, as you said. There's just lots of things going back and forth. We know about Andy Dalton's struggles in primetime, well documented, 5-19 overall. And when I try to make a case for Cincinnati, you try to make one from a situational spot, not the revenge angle, but the actual thing that's going to play out this week, and that's the short week. You know, road teams virtually miss an entire day, right, traveling. And you can make up for that somewhat on a regular week. On a short week, I think that becomes difficult. So you are a day behind with these Thursday games. And that's why there's an advantage for the home team. But physically, when I look at this, it was Cincy that was in the war. They had to exert a lot of energy to come from behind that second half. Meanwhile, the Ravens were resting on the sidelines. Like, there wasn't a defensive lineman that played more than 58% of snaps. Flacco played less than 70% of snaps. Marshall Yanda, many of the offensive linemen, they played limited snaps as well. So physically, it's probably Baltimore that has a little bit of an edge in this game.
When we look, Payne, this will be the highest total in this rivalry going all the way back to September 2015. And you know, expounded on it perfectly, making a case for Cincinnati as our week one best bet as a live underdog. That number, of course, we took +3. Close pick 'em in some spots. And them having a full complement of weapons for Andy Dalton, whether it was Joe Mixon, whose usage rate increased and finally showed flashes, what I think all of us expected from him when they drafted him out of Oklahoma. But you had John Ross in on the act with a touchdown. A.J. Green took full advantage of the single coverage the Colts tried to use to slow him down. Tyler Eifert, etc. When I look at Baltimore, my big concern here is that their defense, especially in the secondary without Jimmy Smith, hasn't typically been one of their strengths. Can they get enough pressure to keep Andy Dalton off his spot if we don't trust the back end completely?
Well, that's the interesting part of this game. It's that pressure. And, you know, we saw the Cincinnati offensive line. They tried to get better in the offseason. They traded for Cordy Glenn. They drafted Billy Price. They were fantastic in the opener against the Colts. Dalton was hit just 3 times on 32 dropbacks. You mentioned Joe Mixon. That was the highest snap rate of his young career. You know, he led the Bengals ground attack. They, as a whole, were 65% successful on run plays. I think certainly it's a tougher task on a short week going against a stout defense like Baltimore. You know, Buffalo is abysmal, and you don't really want to take these numbers and think they're sustainable, but Buffalo was 24% successful on rushing and 21% successful on passes. That Baltimore defense just shut things down. From what I'm hearing, Marlon Humphrey is going to be the guy that gets the first crack at AJ Green, the kid out of Alabama. I believe this is now year two. He showed very good signs last week. I think he's probably up for the task. We saw Eifert, and this is something we mentioned in the preview podcast, certainly healthy, but they're kind of working him back in. He didn't have a full allotment of snaps. I believe he only ran 18 passing routes. So, like, you know, I don't want to get into the fantasy stuff, but he's probably not your guy unless he's going to score a touchdown. He's not going to be a high volume guy because the snap rate is a little bit limited at this point. They're trying to preserve him. I think that's pretty much covered. You know, and Andy Dalton has struggled in prime time. We know about that. I mentioned the numbers, so it is a little bit scary in that regard. Without question, again, Cincinnati is the professional side here. I'm intrigued to see what the other side of the ball looks like. I was thoroughly impressed with that Ravens offensive performance. And again, I know it was the Bills, but their defense was actually pretty good last year.
And I mean, I think a lot of it was made pain. I mean, you talked about in the preview podcast that Joe Flacco realized that the Ravens maybe drafted his replacement. They went out and they got him weapons in Michael Crabtree. They had John Brown, who was a nice piece from Arizona, that they finally looked like they had a little bit of a pulse on that side of the ball, and you wonder if that'll carry over to tonight's game.
You would hope, right? And I know, it's the Bills, but you know, I think this is the Joe Flacco we're going to see this year for the Ravens, and if he is, they're a legitimate contender. He was number one in adjusted completion percentage in week one. He followed up a fantastic preseason. He's in the best shape of his life. He now claims he's also 100% healthy. He's coming off the knee and the back surgeries that he's been dealing with the last few seasons. And as you mentioned, he's certainly motivated with the franchise drafting a quarterback in the first round, which they view as their long-term franchise quarterback. The other thing in this game is we know Baltimore loves to employ this physical brand of football. It's always going to be that way as long as Newsom and Harbaugh are there. And one thing that we have seen from the Cincinnati defense is they have issues stopping the run, especially when Vontaze Burfict isn't in the lineup. They struggle even more than usual. And whether you like him or not, he's an enforcer in the box. That's plain and simple. And when I looked at these numbers a little bit last year, in the 6 games Burfict missed, the Bengals gave up 0.6 yards more per rush attempt, over half a yard more. That's pretty drastic. We know Baltimore is going to employ that style of physical bully ball. They're going to run the ball here, and I think that might be a matchup advantage. Cincinnati is going to have to stop the run. If they can, then they got a shot. You mentioned some weapons there for the Baltimore offense. They weren't. I know the ball got spread around, and each of them had a touchdown. The three big acquisitions in Snead, Brown, and Crabtree. Crabtree actually had a couple drops last week, so hopefully that gets rectified a little bit. But I'm higher on Baltimore, and again, I'm not going to fade the information, but I'm probably not going to find myself on Cincinnati.
No, I mean, I dug into this game myself. I tried to make a case for the home underdog. I tried to make a case for the under, and I'm not sure there was enough there to get me to the window either. When you look at Baltimore, they've actually had their division's number when we talk about it against the spread perspective, 9-3, the last 12 against AFC North opponents. And you hit on some of the struggles for Andy Dalton and AJ Green. When the lights get brighter, they seem to shrink. And I'll say one thing, AJ better hold on to the football today. You cannot put the ball on the carpet twice as a wide receiver in your limited touches like he did. Fortunately for them, they were able to recover one of those fumbles that could have actually resulted in a disaster. So we've talked to Dave Mason. We've had the sportsbook perspective. We've done a deep dive on a lot of the marquee games for this particular weekend. Friendly reminder to all those folks, get their contest picks in. Even if you didn't enter your picks for week one, it doesn't take you out of the running for the season-long prize, although it makes you a long shot, obviously. But you can win some of those weekly prizes and bet the board swag packs. You can, of course, follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason. You can BOL. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod, and you can follow me at Todd Furman. But Payne, we got to take some of that newfound wealth from the Bengals last weekend. We got to walk it to the window. Where are we going to try and find our strongest investment for the NFL in week two?
You know what? Let's go with the Atlanta Falcons.
Man, I really thought that you were going to give out the Pittsburgh Steelers the way we had talked about that game. I thought that that was going to potentially come out of your mouth.
Now you're making me second guess myself here.
No, go with the gut, man. Go with the gut, and if the Falcons are the angle, then you would go with the Falcons.
All right, let's go with the Atlanta Falcons. There's plenty of 5.5 out there, so let's lay that. I think the situation might be too much to overcome here for Carolina, just dealing with this hurricane in Atlanta with the extra prep time. Again, we're cognizant of the injuries on the defensive side of the ball for Atlanta. Again, this spot feels like it's too much to overcome, and I think that defensive line can probably get some pressure on a mash unit for Carolina, so let's lay it with the Atlanta Falcons. 5.5 is available pretty much everywhere at this point. And not that we're going to talk about key numbers, but 6 is a secondary key number. And that number has certainly gained a little bit more steam, so to speak, with the extra point being moved back. So it is a pretty important number.
So what you're saying then is bet the Falcons, back that up with a Christian McCaffrey over props, because that's Carolina's only shot to keep this game competitive.
I'm not a big prop guy, but
I'm kidding on that. So sure. Atlanta Falcons -5.5. Your bet the board best investment for NFL week two. Special thanks to all our key contributors. You, the listeners, remember, go over to iTunes, rate the podcast, 5-star reviews. Every little bit helps, and we can't thank you guys enough for making this one of the fastest growing, even in year 5, sports betting, independent sports betting podcast. I know, Payne, we've been thrilled with the numbers thus far and think they're only going to improve rapidly throughout the course of the season as we bring our A-game week in, week out.
Absolutely, and we appreciate all you guys, the loyal listeners. We wouldn't be doing this without you, obviously. So every little bit helps. Retweet the podcast, tell a friend, tell a coworker, leave that 5-star review on iTunes, because you know they're algorithm-based, so the more 5 stars you get, the higher up you go. And I think we're probably a couple of weeks away from another iTunes giveaway. So as long as you leave that 5-star review, leave a nice little sentence, your name, your review will go in a nice little simulator, and you'll have a chance to win a Bet the Board swag pack, same as if you were to win a weekly prize in the NFL contest. So it just basically is a Visa gift card and a bunch of Bet the Board gear. So there we go.
Looking forward to that. For Payne Insider, I am your fearless leader, at least most days, Todd Furman. Best of luck with all of your NFL investments in week 2. And come Sunday afternoon, we'll see you at the window with an Atlanta Falcons ticket.